Welcome to Globally Minded Medicine, a podcast of quick reviews and helpful tips on medical topics, cultures, customs, and sustainable practices that are applicable at home and abroad.
The opinions expressed are our own and do not represent those of our schools or our employers and are not meant for medical advice. It's just a little education and global exploration.
Janet is a 35-year-old female who presents to your clinic with 3 days of fever, body aches, and fatigue, and 1 day of abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting. She says that it hurts all the way down to her bones and even to move her eyes. Symptoms started abruptly 3 days after returning home from a humanitarian trip in the Caribbean, where she went and visited rural areas. She was taking malaria prophylaxis, but did not use much insect repellent and admits to several mosquito bites during her week-long service trip. Welcome back to Globally Minded Medicine. We are going to be talking about dengue today, and joining me for this discussion are student doctors Walker and Walker. We have Ellie Walker and her husband, Stephen Walker. Welcome, both of you, to the podcast.
Good to be here.
We're pretty excited.
Yeah, it should be fun. So this could be many things.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Most of this presentation, it seems like, well, here's another fever and aches illness.
Right.
So pretty typical non-specific presentation, right?
Right. And that sometimes is the problem, is these things present all very similarly. Although we did throw in some fairly classic symptoms for Janet.
So we're going to talk about dengue. In particular, with our clinical presentation, there is the pain all the way down to the bone. So dengue is often called break bone fever.
Yeah, break bone or bone break.
Yeah, something like that. It's often called that just because the pain that it causes is very deep.
Yeah, it's interesting. My little brother, he actually ended up getting dengue fever while he was serving a church mission in Bolivia. And that was one of the main things that he talks about with his experience getting it, was it just felt like all of his bones in his body were broken and just hurt down to the core. So not fun.
Wow. Do you remember, did he have that pain with eye motion or that retroorbital pain?
He did. Yeah. He had fever and was super fatigued. He was in bed for a day or two. But yeah, the main thing that he talks about was that bone break feeling that you get with it. So not a fun one.
No, definitely not. And pretty prevalent. How much of a problem is dengue?
It's the most prevalent fever-related illness with travelers,
mm-hmm.
right? But worldwide, there are millions and millions of cases of dengue fever every single year.
Yeah, I think the last time I looked at the statistics, it said about 100 million people per year. And it's about in 50% of the global population lives in risk areas.
So it's here. It sits around us. And I think the U.S. is probably one of the more underreported areas of dengue fever, just because of what we talked about, how a lot of the common presenting symptoms of dengue fever are so similar to other viruses that are more commonly talked about. But yeah, you know, it's interesting too, though, most of the cases that actually are reported in the U.S. they're imported, meaning that these are people that traveled to endemic areas and then came back infected with dengue fever, where there are some states that actually have locally contracted dengue fever. One of the ones that I've read about most frequently is in Florida. It has people that are getting infected just by staying and being in Florida, which was interesting.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. How are they getting infected? What is the vector or the way that people are typically getting dengue fever?
So it's through a dengue mosquito.
Ah, those mosquitoes again.
No, it's a specific type of mosquito called the Aedes aegypti mosquito. So this mosquito also carries other viruses with it, which kind of makes it tricky. But this mosquito is very prevalent in areas where there are monsoon seasons. So the mosquito will lay eggs in maybe like dark places. That's where it likes to live. And when monsoons come, so there'll be a rainy season, the eggs can hatch in water, but then those mosquitoes will lay eggs other places where there used to be water. And then in the dry seasons, those mosquito eggs can last for a couple months before another rainy season comes, which makes it kind of hard to eradicate the mosquito. But number one way to prevent it is to make sure you're wearing insect repellent.
Yeah, no, that's very important. Every time I go on a trip, I pack that insect repellent. And I tell all the people traveling with me, make sure to bring insect repellent. Because like you said, it's not just dengue. This same mosquito carries Zika, chikungunya, yellow fever. Although dengue does tend to be the worst of those as far as prevalence. And there are other mosquitoes out there as well carrying other things like malaria and whatnot. So definitely prevention of mosquito bites is a big thing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like with malaria, we kind of talked about that earlier where the lady was taking a malaria prophylaxis. But she didn't wear her mosquito repellent, so she still got dengue. And there's not really a pill for dengue that you could use.
Right. So you talked already about there being some sustained transmission already in the United States in some of the more southern states like Florida. Yeah, I think we'd be remiss to not talk about how climate change has increased the area that this mosquito has been able to go into and create a home. It's certainly something that we need to look on at a global sustainability level as well in order to not continue to spread these diseases into further areas of the world.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up climate change. Ellie and I were talking about that today. And one of the things that they mentioned about Aedes aegypti is that it actually cannot live above 6,500 feet of elevation. And I think a lot of that is because of the typical climate that you find at that altitude. And what we've seen with climate change is as places are getting warmer and warmer, that area that the Aedes aegypti can populate or grow in is getting higher and higher. It's important to keep learning about it, especially in with the continued changing climate. That's a great point.
What types of dengue are there? Is there only one type? Is there multiple? And what are the kind of typical presentations between the different types? Do we know that?
We do, yeah. There are four different types of dengue fever, and they all kind of range in symptoms. The first type is pretty similar to that case that you read about. It's those very typical non-specific viral infection symptoms of, you know, those fever, chills, body aches. You can get more serious illness to the point of organ failure, like kidney failure, and massive bleeding. It's also known as hemorrhagic fever. Whereas the initial infection of dengue can be pretty similar to others, it can hit hard if you get reinfected.
Yeah, so like the cause of the hemorrhaging and everything like that is because the virus will destroy your platelets, which is what helps like your blood kind of clot up. So if the virus is destroying those clotting factors, you can get some bleeding and it can become pretty severe. Actually, in just normal dengue, sometimes people will show up with a little bit of petechiae, which is just like a little bit of blood vessel rupture at the edges, I believe. Is that correct, Dr. Wortle?
Yeah, so you just have these micro hemorrhages with the petechiae.
Yeah, just tiny. There's actually a little test that you can do. It's not super specific or sensitive, but you can put like a blood pressure cuff on somebody's arm, make like a little circle on their arm, and then you pump it up just to kind of increase the pressure in the arm. And then if they have a bunch, I think the actual tourniquet tests are supposed to be a specific amount, but of little petechiae or little blood dots that you'll see on the skin that appear. And that kind of just shows that there's like an increased risk of, I mean, it could be a sign of dengue, but this also could happen with Zika, things like that, so.
Right. Any of those potential hemorrhagic fever causing viruses, right? And like you said, it's from the thrombocytopenia or low platelets. And then you can get plasma leakage as well. Although the mechanism there isn't quite as clear, but lots of different factors can go into leaky blood vessels that seep out the plasma, and everyone starts third spacing their fluid. Then they present with really bad dehydration and can go into shock. So, and those can be life-threatening scenarios, right?
Yeah, totally.
Especially in areas where like there's not a lot of healthcare, access to healthcare. That's tricky and hard.
So you said earlier there are four types of viruses, four different strains.
Yeah.
And they can get infected with any of those four. If they're infected by one, does that give them immunity against all four?
It doesn't. You can get reinfected with any of the other ones once you've been infected with one, which is why it can be so severe once you've had it once, because you can get a secondary dengue infection, and that's when you're at higher risk for those bleeding issues and organ failure that we were talking about, which brings an interesting point into consideration. So there's actually a vaccine that's out there for dengue fever, but they recommend that you don't get the vaccine if you have never had dengue fever before, because it acts as almost an initial infection of dengue fever. And then if you get it after that, after you receive the vaccine, then it can be more severe. So they recommend in these endemic areas where dengue is so prevalent that you only receive the vaccine if you've previously been infected with dengue fever.
Right. That's kind of crazy, right?
Really, really crazy.
Thankfully, not all vaccines have that issue. It's interesting how it works, where if you have dengue for the first time, you typically have a mild or possibly even asymptomatic course. And then when you get it a second time later on in life, your initial immune response can actually facilitate that virus spreading faster through your mast cells and give you a worse case. And that's typically when the severe dengue happens. And so getting that vaccine, if you haven't had that first case already, can actually put you at risk for that severe dengue. So that's called an antibody dependent enhancement. And it can happen again with your first case or with the virus or with the vaccine. But it's nice to know that after you've had one, then you can get the vaccine. And that can help to better protect you and not have that second severe case. So that's good.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about kind of the typical presentation.
Yeah.
Our patient had some symptoms, but they vary. There's several that could pop up. What should people be looking for in patients that present with fever and a history of travel?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different things, like fever, there could be a rash, muscle and joint pain is common. Actually, when we talked about the petechiae, the little blood hemorrhages, like bleeding from gums or like any mucosal area is actually kind of common. There is a febrile phase, so people will often present with like a high fever and chills for 3 to 7 days. With that comes like the headache, the malaise, the retroorbital eye pain, muscle bone aches, vomiting, cough, things like that. Just kind of like it just seems like a viral illness, you know, not very specific. But there are a couple things that you should watch out for. I mean, the warning signs are abdominal pain or tenderness, persistent vomiting, fluid accumulation on physical exams, or like some swelling possibly in the legs. Anywhere really though, mucosal bleeding, lethargy or restlessness. Also on that list, there's liver enlargement, and an increase in hematocrit with rapid decrease in platelet count. So you would need some lab values for that one, but those were the warning signs that we've been given.
And so you could have asymptomatic, mild, and then that you have this, kind of dengue without warning signs, dengue with warning signs. And then what would push somebody into severe dengue? We used to say dengue fever and then dengue hemorrhagic fever. And there was an older classification that was a little bit difficult. It was pretty narrow and difficult to implement in low resource areas. And so the WHO actually came out with a 2009 classification that simplified it a little bit and also made it a little bit more broad so that it would be more sensitive and catch them more. And so that would be dengue without warning signs, dengue with warning signs, and then severe dengue.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what is severe dengue?
Why don't you keep going? You're the expert on this.
Okay. So severe dengue, I mean, that one could develop without the warning signs, but it presents with severe plasma leakage, which leads to shock or fluid accumulation or respiratory distress. So they kind of get short of breath. There's also severe bleeding that could happen or severe organ impairment. So I think the liver is the one that often gets hit with dengue, the kidneys even too.
Yep.
Right. And if there's any, of course, neurologic or heart involvement, that would push it into severe as well. So those aren't as common, but they certainly can happen, like myocarditis or aseptic meningitis, encephalitis, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
This severe dengue tends to happen kind of just about when the fever, the febrile phase is ending. The fever is about to, it either has gone away or it's about to go away. And then they enter this critical period.
Never mind.
Yep, that's right. So you think you're in the clear and then it gets you.
Right, yeah. And so there's this 2 days of kind of scary time that it could be bad. So you really got to watch those patients right around mm-hmm. that time period. And hopefully they clear it out, right? If they make it through that 2 days of the fever's gone, they've gone 48 hours without fever, and they're starting to feel better, then they're really out of the woods.
Yeah. Right? Yep. Just like normal virus usually comes and goes. And
that's what we want. But what do we do when that isn't the case? So I guess about 10% of people with dengue, up to 10%, can go into severe dengue. What do we do at that point? What's our treatment?
So severe dengue, most of these things you manage by symptoms. And so obviously if someone's progressing to severe dengue, then oftentimes these people will be hospitalized and treated actually in inpatient. And so if there's, you can do IV fluids if they're in shock or having decreasing blood pressure to help them recuperate that blood loss that they're getting. So you can do blood transfusions for the hemorrhaging, treat the fevers, use acetaminophen, right? Not the NSAIDs or the aspirin.
Right. Yeah, it just seems like there's not a whole lot that we can give them besides replacing what they've lost.
Right. And then that's such a balance too, because they're third spacing this fluid. They're putting out in their extravascular spaces. And at some point when that leakage starts to improve, they're going to reabsorb that fluid. And so you have to hydrate them with that crystalloid substance, and sometimes even with albumin or starch type fluid to kind of keep that fluid in there. But if you do it too much, then once they start to get better, now they're overhydrated. And so it's really a balance, right? It's a tough thing to manage. This is somebody that you really want to keep a close eye on to their eyes and nose. And watching their vitals really closely so that we're hydrating sufficient, but we're not overhydrating. So yeah, great job.
Yeah.
We have more to learn from student doctors Walker and Walker as they talk about an exciting control strategy from the World Mosquito Program in part 2 of our dengue discussion. So for now, if dengue means more than bones that feel broke, and watching for warning signs is really no joke, you might be globally minded. Stay globally minded, my friends, and we'll see you for part 2 of Dengue.